Well, good evening. Welcome to Next Level Church. My name is Rob Shepherd. I'm the lead pastor here. And at Next Level, we absolutely love kids. And one of our goals is that kids would be able to worship with their parents in the auditorium each and every week. But we also want them to hear about Jesus in a lesson that is appropriate for them. And so now we're going to dismiss all of our kids, first through fifth grade, to Next Level Kids. Follow the lovely Justin Bieber doing a jig in the back. Follow him to Next Level Kids. Give it up for our kids as they head on out. Love our kids. If you're a parent and this is your first time and you haven't checked in your kids, you can follow them out there and check them in safe and secure. Next Level Kids. Going to learn some awesome stuff and follow Justin Bieber. I like Justin Bieber. You're an idiot. You stupid fool. You piece of trash. I hate you. I despise you. You look fat today. You going bald? I don't like you. I'm better than you. You have no place here. You two-toned, zebra-headed, slime-coated, pimple-farming, paramecium brain, munching on your own mucus. What's a paramecium brain? I'll tell you what a paramecium brain. It's a one-celled critter with no brain that can't fly. That's a paramecium brain. Now, that last insult was brought to you by one of my all-time favorite movies. Anyone know the movie? Hook. Very good. One of you has seen it. It's a great, great movie. I actually really like that scene because this is a 100% true story. We were going to see that movie, and my dad was giving us a lecture. There's three of us kids. He was giving us a lecture about name-calling, and then we go see Hook, and in the middle of Hook, there's this whole scene dedicated to name-calling, and I got scared. I thought my dad was going to take us out of the movie, but I looked over, and he was sleeping, and so luckily we got to stay and see the rest of Hook. I'll continue now with my insults. You're lame. You're so vain, you probably thought this song was about you. I can't stand you. You jerk. You know, I don't know when it happened, but sometime in our country, the word jerk morphed. In the 1980s, early 80s, it meant idiot. I don't know if you remember the movie The Jerk featuring Steve Martin. Well, in that movie, he's not a jerk like I think of a jerk. Like, I think a jerk is like a rude person, someone like cuts you off on purpose or something like that. No, he's just an idiot. And that's what jerk meant back then. But sometime between 1985 and 1992, the word jerk morphed from being like an idiot to being like a rude person. In fact, if you watch the movie Goonies, at one point in the movie Goonies, they call my favorite character Chunk, they call him a jerk. And Chunk is not a jerk. He might be an idiot, but he's not a jerk like I think of jerk. Either way, whether you use jerk like an idiot or you use it as like a rude person, it's not a nice thing. And I used it intentionally because I wanted to grab your attention. We're continuing this series called Done Talking, and it's through the book of James. And James was a pastor. He was actually Jesus' half-brother, and he wrote a letter to Christians. And James is just a straight shooter. He just comes out and you don't have to wonder, like, what's he talking about? He doesn't beat around the bush. He just tells you, like, black and white, this is what you're supposed to do and this is what you're not supposed to do. And I love James for that. Tonight, though, we're going to see that James has a challenge for Christians. And if you're here tonight and you are a Christian and you thought it felt awkward to have a pastor using that kind of language in church, you should feel that same awkwardness if you insult another human being. This is not just a standard for me. This is not just a standard for pastors. James is going to give a challenge to all Christians. And he's specifically going to talk about your words. And he's going to tell us why your words, especially spoken to other human beings, are so important. So if you've ever struggled with, like, name calling, if you get mad and, like, these colorful words come out of your mouth, if you've ever wondered, why is it a big deal for Christians to cuss? If you have ever struggled with name calling or gossiping or putting someone down, then tonight's talk is for you, because James is just going to hit us and tell us what we're supposed to do about it. Now, I love James so much, and let's just dive in and see what James says. And I want to show you why I love him at the very beginning. He says at the beginning of this section, he says, we all stumble in many ways. If anyone is never at fault in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check. Now, I said this earlier, but James is a pastor, and I love that he's a pastor because he's speaking to, like, his people. He's speaking to, like, his church. And I can't prove this. This is just a theory. But I think that this is coming from one of James's sermons. Like, I think that he, like, preached this to his group, and then, like, he was like, okay, there's a group of Christians that are scattered all around because of persecution, and they need to hear this sermon that I just preached. And so he writes it down, and he sends it out to them. But I love it because he starts us off, and he says, we all stumble in many ways. We all stumble. And I love that he says that because he's about to start talking about something that we're all guilty of. And if he didn't start off by saying we all stumble, I think we'd all leave here like with our heads down and just feel beat up about ourselves. But James says, listen, we all stumble. All of us. If you've been a Christian for 40 years, you still stumble. If you're new to this thing called Christianity, you're going to stumble. If you're a pastor like me, you're going to stumble. We all stumble. And I love that he puts that in the verse. But I want to make sure that we understand something. As a Christian, we're going to sin. We're going to stumble. But stumbling is different than, like, willfully choosing to sin. It's kind of like this. When I was a senior in high school, I went to our junior-senior banquet. And I went to a private Christian school who didn't believe that Christians could dance or didn't believe Christians should dance. I don't remember which one. But either way, we couldn't dance at this thing. We had a banquet. And the banquet, like, instead of, like, having, like, a prom, we would go eat dinner. And all of us would dress up in our nice, you know, suits. And the girls would wear these nice, like, expensive dresses. And this was, like, a really big deal. And you really looked forward to going to junior-senior banquet. Well, I had a date, and I double-dated with my best friend and his girlfriend. And so we drove together. It was over in Virginia Beach, and there was this really nice restaurant. And the restaurant was on the second floor. And so we get into the elevator, and we go up. And when the elevator doors open, you're, like, at the banquet. And all the tables are facing you, so, like, everybody can see you walk in. Well, the elevator doors open, and I take a step. And when I take a step, I hear, rip! I immediately close my eyes because I realized that this rip wasn't coming from me. I hadn't ripped my own clothes. My foot was on the dress of my best friend's date, and it was the loudest rip I've ever heard. And I literally just closed my eyes because it was so loud, I envisioned ripping the dress off of her and her stumbling out of the elevator, like, buck naked, and, like, everyone staring at her. And I was like, oh, this is awful. Like, take me to my happy place. Get me out of here. Like, it was an awful feeling. And I sat there for a few seconds with my eyes closed, and I heard a little squeal. And so I just opened my eyes to face it, and thankfully, her dress did not rip completely off, but it did rip about an inch in the back of her dress. And she was not happy with me. Like, she'd spent money on this dress, she looked really nice. Thankfully, it was at least in the back, so, like, a lot of people couldn't see it. But, like, can you imagine, like, how frustrated, especially if you're a woman, if you're a woman, let me make that singular, hopefully you're not multiple women, if you're a woman, can you imagine, like, dressing up for this thing and, like, you've already taken pictures, but you just walk in and, like, some dude rips your dress? Like, it was this awful feeling for her and it was an awful feeling for me. And I apologized. All night long, I apologized. Now, did I intentionally do it? No, I stumbled. It was a mistake. Like, I was clumsy. My feet were too big. I just had hit puberty as a senior in high school. Like, I wasn't used to walking yet. Like, I had lots of excuses, but I made a mistake, and I felt awful for it. That's what it means to stumble. And if you're a Christian, you're going to stumble. You'll probably stumble daily. We stumble. You didn't mean to do this, but you walked into a situation and you made a poor choice and then you feel bad about it. And when you stumble, you ask God to forgive you. He forgives you. He cleanses you of your sin and you move on. So we don't, like, beat ourselves up about the stumbles because they're going to happen. But there's a difference between stumbling and willfully choosing to sin. And if you're a Christian and you're willfully choosing to sin, you got some issues. If you're saying things like, tonight I'm going to get plastered, you're willfully choosing to sin. If you're watching a movie because you know that there is nudity in it and you want to feed the lust of your flesh, you're willfully choosing to sin. And you should have some type of problem with this. If you're going to a place that's going to lead you to fall into temptation because you know in the back of your mind, if I just get there, it's going to cause me to sin. It's going to give in to what I want to do, and what I want to do is wrong. That's willfully choosing to sin. And as a Christian, we're called to a higher standard. So Paul says, we all stumble. Like, all of us. We're going to stumble. We're going to make mistakes. But there's a difference between stumbling and, like, willfully choosing to sin. Now, Jesus has forgiven us for everything. When we willfully choose to sin, he's forgiven us. And when we stumble, he's forgiven us. But I like to think of it like the difference between a vacation home and your permanent home. When you go on vacation, you're only there for a short amount of time. And you know, I'm not living here. This is just like a temporary thing. And when you stumble in sin, it's like a vacation. It's not something that you're like, oh, yeah, this feels good. I sinned. I'm just going to live here. Woo! I like my new digs. No, you sin, you stumble into sin, you say, ah, this doesn't feel right with my spirit. There's something wrong with this. And you ask God for forgiveness, and then you get some accountability, and you try to move on. But you don't live there. And so James says, we all stumble. And he says that, and I'm so glad, because then he starts to build his case. He says next, if anyone is never at fault in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check. So this is where James introduces his theme, and he's talking about words. And he says, if anyone never stumbles in the words that they say, they're a perfect human being. How many of you, by that definition, are perfect? Man, we got a lot of work to do. There's no perfect people at this church. No, none of us are perfect. Why? We've all stumbled. We've all said things that we're like, oh, I wish I could just take that back. I didn't mean to hurt them with those words. Or I did mean to hurt them with those words. Like, I said something and it showed me that I was not perfect. And so James says we all stumble. And then he starts introducing this theme by talking about our words. And let's continue going and see what James says next. He says, when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. James comes out swinging. He just throws it out there. And I love James, and I really think that he's like an amazing pastor because he starts to give us some illustrations. And I think if you want to be a good communicator, you got to tell stories, you got to give illustrations. I don't know if any of you guys have seen the movie Lincoln, but my family went to go see it a little over a week ago. And we were really excited to see this movie, and I'm just going to brag on him for a little bit. My dad actually plays the doctor in the movie Lincoln. And so we were really happy to see him on the big screen. My dad's an actor. This is a great part for him. We were really excited. My wife took pictures, like, of the screen. Like, we were really excited to see that. But one of the things that I loved about this movie is I have a lot of knowledge of, like, Lincoln. I know some of the things that he did, but I've never seen him in the light of this film. And one of the things that Lincoln did that I think is one of the reasons why he was the most popular president ever, in the midst of, like, chaos, he tells stories. And there's even this scene in the movie where he starts telling a story, and like one of the guys is like, I can't take another one of your stories. And he like just runs out. But everyone else is like glued to it. They want to know what he's going to say. Why? Because stories stick with us. I can't tell you how many times I've told a story, and then 3 years later, someone comes up to me and says, I remember when you told that story. It was so awesome. I don't remember what the point was, but it was a great story. Like, we remember stories. We remember illustrations, and so James is trying to make a point here, and he wants it to stick with us. And he says, your tongue is a powerful thing. He says, picture this. It's like a bit that is put into the mouth of a horse, and this huge beast is controlled. If you want the horse to go right, you pull on the reins, which is connected to this bit, and you can control this big animal. Even though it's so much bigger than you, it's controlled by a little bit. And then he says, or take a ship for an example. A ship, you got these massive ships. What are they controlled by? A small rudder. And I know a lot of you work at the shipyard. And even though the rudders at the shipyard are really big, compared to the rest of the ship, it's really small. And the rudder controls the boat wherever the captain wants to go. It goes that direction. And James is comparing our words, our tongue, to those illustrations. And he's saying, even though this tongue is a really small thing, like some of you, though, some of you probably have big tongues. Some of you can, like, stick out your tongue, like, touch your nose. I can't do that. But even if you have a really big tongue, compared to the rest of your body, it's a small vessel. And James says this little small thing can cause a lot of damage. In fact, he compares it to a forest fire. And he says a forest fire is started by what? A little spark. A little spark sets a forest fire. I believe with all my heart that negativity breeds negativity. I think when we go negative on someone, it plants a seed and it just spreads. It's a spark that can do so much damage. Negativity breeds negativity, and I like to think of it like a snowball. And I don't know if you've seen that car commercial where the guy has a snowball and he rolls it at the top of the hill and it rolls down. It just gains momentum and gains more and more snow, and it becomes like this boulder of snow, and it like takes out this other car. That's what negativity does. When you plant negativity out there, you might even be passive-aggressive with your negativity. Like, I know people who, like, they don't, like, just bash on someone, but they just throw in a little jab. Like, do you know Joe? Oh, yeah, I love Joe. Joe's a great guy. He's not great with his money, but he's a great guy. They just, like, slip it in there, like, just a little jab. And what does it do? When you go negative on someone, when you gossip, when you talk negative about another human being, it plants a seed in that person's mind. And I almost had a friendship that was ruined because of this. When I was in college, I was really good friends with someone my very first semester, and we hung out all the time. And throughout this first semester, we spent a lot of time with each other, and this person never got on my nerves. At the end of the semester, though, we were at a Christmas party, and there were some other college students there that I didn't know, and they looked really cool, and so I wanted to get to know them, so I walked over to try to get to know them. And as we were talking, like, we had a lot in common, we started laughing, it was like I had a really good time, and then afterwards, they invited me to hang out with them at another place after the party. And I was like, inside, I was like, yes, like, that's awesome, like, the cool people like me, like, I'm going to hang out with them. But then they said to me, don't tell so-and-so, we want to keep this on the DL. And I said, well, why? And they said, well, because this person is annoying. And they listed these specific reasons at why this person was really annoying. Well, at the time, I didn't think it affected me. I just dismissed it and was like, you know, it's my friend, whatever. And I ended up not hanging out with him that night. But a few weeks later, over Christmas break, I hung out with his friend. And about 30 minutes into hanging out, this person started getting on every last one of my nerves. In fact, it got so bad, I literally had to pull a Zach Morris and take a timeout. Like, we were in the mall, and I literally said, you just need to wait right here. And I walked out just to catch my breath because I was so annoyed at this person. Now, why did that happen? There's a great chance that this human being would have eventually got on my nerves, but my theory is it happened a lot faster because somebody planted a seed in my mind. They pointed out some faults, and it was there. And so I didn't intentionally look for it, but when I hung out with them, they just came out. Negativity breeds negativity. You go negative on someone, then it plants a seed, then they go negative on that person. And it just snowballs. And James is saying, as a Christian, this should not be. Like, our words, like, they're like atomic bombs. Like, we should not start fires with our words. Instead, we need to go positive on people. In fact, I heard a pastor say once that if you ever think something nice about another human being, say it. If you ever think something nice, say it. In fact, I would like to add to that, not only say it, I think you should tweet it. I think you should Facebook it. I think you should text them. I think you should call them. I think you should write a letter. You can get a billboard for all I care, but I think you need to say it loud. Why? Because we live in a negative culture. Everybody's going negative. And negativity breeds negativity. And as a Christian, we have power with our words. We can actually build people up. So instead of going negative, if you think a nice thought, whatever it is, take a second, just call them right there. It might be awkward, but just do it anyway. I don't understand why we think twice about going positive on someone and we don't think twice about going negative. It makes no sense to me. We are quick to put someone down. Now, granted, it's probably behind their back, but we are really quick to put someone down. But we hesitate to lift someone up, don't we? We say things like, oh, I don't want their head to get big. Let their head get big. That's on them. You're not called to worry about the size of their head. You're called to encourage people and challenge them. Like, tell them, man, you mean a lot to me. I was thinking about you today. I just wanted to bless you. I just wanted to tell you about this great thing. I had this thought about you. Text them. Write it to them. Facebook them. Do whatever you can. Build them up. Why? Because negativity breeds negativity, and we live in an incredibly negative world. And negative words are like a spark that can set an entire forest fire. Well, James goes on to continue giving us illustrations. He says, all kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and creatures of the sea are being tamed and have been tamed by man. But no man can tame the tongue. It's a restless evil full of deadly poison. I love that last illustration that the tongue is a restless evil. It's like your tongue is just waiting to go negative on someone. Like, it just can't wait for that next negative comment to come out. It's looking forward to it. It's a restless evil filled with deadly poison. Now, poison is not something that we have to worry about, thankfully. But, like, have you ever seen a movie where they have, like, the bamboo stick and they put, like, a poison dart in it and they're like, and it, like, sticks in the guy's neck. And then what does he do? He dies. Why? A little poison dart. It's filled with poison. It kills the whole body. And James is saying it's the same thing with your words. One of the biggest lies that we've ever been sold in the history of the world is sticks and stones will break your bones, but words will never hurt you. That's a lie. In fact, some of you are here tonight and you have been hit with such powerful words that you wish they would have hit you with a stick or a stone. Words can be like atomic bombs. You can totally destroy not just someone's day, you can destroy their life. You say the wrong word to the right person and it has a huge impact. It can affect their self-esteem. It can affect the rest of their life, the way that they view themselves. Why? Because someone gave them a careless word that had power over them. James is saying this is a deadly poison. So for Christians, this is a big deal. Your words have the power to bring life or to bring death. Now, there is a part in this verse, though, that I think I kind of wish James would have done something different. Like, I'm really tracking with him, and most of the time in the book of James, and I hope that you're reading it along with us each week, but most of the time in the book of James, like, you don't have to guess at what he's saying, or like, there's just, it's just very, like, there. But in this verse, James starts off, and after he talks about the animals, he says, no man can tame the tongue. This is the part that I wish he would have given a little bit of explanation on. Because I don't know if you're like me, but in reading this, like, I'm feeling a little bit convicted. I'm like, okay, I've definitely said some words that I regret. And like, when I get mad at like other drivers, I've definitely said some things that I wish I could take back. And like, I want to do better with my words. And like, so I'm feeling really convicted by James. But then he says, no man can tame the tongue. So it's like, okay, I can't tame it. Oh, well. Like, nothing I can do. Thanks, James. I feel awful about myself, but I don't know what to do. And I think James missed it here because there is something we can do. You can't tame the tongue, but there is something that Christians can do that can impact your words. And James gives us that application, but it's in the form of another story. So we have to kind of dig into it. Let's keep going to see what James says next. James says, with the tongue, we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers, this should not be. So before he gives us the application, before he gives us the final challenge, he throws out this one last thing that's just supposed to grab our attention. You want to know why it's a big deal if you go negative on another human being? You want to know why it's a big deal to curse another human being? James says because humans are made in the image of God. And in essence, James is saying that when you go negative on someone and when you put down another human being, you are going negative on God. It's not just that that person is a jerk. You are insulting the Creator. It's kind of like this. If you have kids, hopefully no one's ever insulted your kids, but I have kids. They're 20 months old. And if after the service you saw them running around and you walked up to me and said, your twins are idiots. They are the dumbest 20-month-olds I've ever been around. Like, if you said that to me, I wouldn't just be like, oh, yeah, you're right. Like, they are pretty dumb. Or I wouldn't say, oh, you know, you're going to offend them. Don't say that. No, I would get ticked off at you. Why? Because you're not just insulting my kids. You're insulting me. They're a part of me. I produce them. So if they're idiots, it's probably my fault. It's definitely not my wife's fault. And so James is saying, when you insult the creation, you're insulting the Creator. That's why your words are so powerful. I love the creation story. I don't know if you've ever read it in Genesis, but when God created something, what did he do? He spoke it into existence. When God wanted to see trees, he said, let there be trees. When he wanted to see light, he said, let there be light. He spoke things into existence. And I have to wonder if maybe that's why our words are so powerful. Because we're in the image of the Creator. And what did the Creator do? He spoke things into existence. So when we speak things into existence. So when you go negative on someone, you're speaking that negativity into an existence. And that's why it hurts so bad. But as the creation, we can reflect our God by going positive on people and by encouraging people. And when we do, we speak truth and love into existence. Your words are incredibly powerful. Negativity breeds negativity. But Christians are called to a higher standard. Now let's see how James wraps this whole thing up. James says, can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. Now, James asks us a couple questions here. He says, can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? And the answer is no. He asks us another question. He says, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? And the answer is no. He says, neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. And then he just ends this and he moves on to another thought. But this is where his application is. But this is really where I wish he would have just come out and just said, hey, this is what this means. But here's what James does, and he does this so much in his letter. James often echoes some of the sermons from his brother Jesus. And James, a lot of people believe, was the very first book of the New Testament written. And so back then, they didn't even have Jesus' messages written. So it was like he was just going off of like memory. And Jesus taught, when he talked about something, he said that he gave the same exact idea, that as a Christian, you are to bear fruit. And what is fruit? Well, it's the things like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness. And how are people going to know that you're a Christian? It's by the fruit that you produce. And so if you're supposed to be a Christian producing fruit, that means like you're not producing like gold bars. I don't know. Like you're not producing cars. You're not producing munchkins. You're not producing like anything else but fruit. Christians produce fruit. And James is making this exact same point. He says, can a salt spring produce fresh water? And the answer is like, no. And so what's he saying? He's saying, if you are a Christian, you cannot produce negative words. You can't do it. It just doesn't go right with what you're created to do. So now we have to go back and say, okay, James, well, if we can't tame the tongue and we're not supposed to be producing negative words, why do we still do it? And this is where I wish he would have just given us the application. I think the application, though, comes from Jesus' sermon that was on the same lines. And Jesus said, if you want to produce fruit, you've got to abide in him. What does it mean to abide? Well, it means simply to make your home in. It means to spend time with him. And here's the thing, when you spend time with Jesus, he does something amazing. He changes your heart. And I don't know if you know this or not, but your words are a reflection of your heart. And if you're continually going negative, if you're continually cursing out someone, if you're continually angry, if the words that are coming out of your mouth are not representing God, it's not just that you have a bad tongue, it's that you have a bad heart. And you can be a Christian and still have a bad heart. And the answer is to abide in Jesus. When I was a kid, I was in the children's choir at our church, and we used to sing this song. And the song, it's amazing that I still remember it. I was like in third grade, and the song had very simple lyrics. It said, input, output, what comes in is what comes out. Input, output, what comes in is what comes out. And that stuck with me. I think that's what James is saying here. If you want to produce fresh water, you've got to change your heart. You've got to change. You've got to abide in Jesus. You start spending time with Jesus, he changes your heart. And then input, you pour good stuff in, great stuff comes out. You pour more into your relationship with God. You spend time reading the Bible. That's why the Bible is so important. It's like a mirror. It reflects us. You read the Bible and you're like, oh, wow, my life doesn't look like that. It doesn't look like that. So you're inspired to spend time with God. You spend time with God because Jesus, like, he died for you. So it's like not only do we have to do this work, he died for us in our place. We go to Jesus, and then he gives us the power to make these changes. Input, output, what comes in is what comes out. Negativity breeds negativity. Your words are like atomic bombs. They can either bring death or they can bring life. And as a Christian, James is challenging us to go to another level. And I'd like to add to that, and I would like to say as a church, James is challenging us to go to another level. I want Next Level Church to not just be known as a place that comes and worships God and does a few things in the community. I want people to know us by the things that we say. I want our actions to back up what we believe. I want people at your work to say, I don't believe in your God, but I believe in you because of your words, and it makes me want to believe in your God. I want our words to be uplifting to people. I want people around us just to say, hey, hold up. This whole world is negative. Why are you so stinking positive? What are you on? What are you doing? And for us to come back and say, hey, I want to tell you, if it weren't for God, I would be incredibly negative. But God has changed my heart, and because he's changed my heart, I can't help but be positive about things. Everyone at work is going negative on the boss, but you find something positive to say. That's not natural. That comes from God. Everyone's going negative on our country. Everyone's going negative on the economy. Everyone's freaking out, and yet you're finding something positive to say. That's not natural. That comes from God. You abide in Jesus. Jesus changes your heart, and then all of a sudden, the words that come out, they reflect the condition of your heart. Abide in Jesus, and he'll change the condition of your heart. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for this day, and God, thank you for James's incredibly challenging words. God, I ask that we wouldn't just think about them, but God, I ask that we would be done talking and that we would do it. God, I ask that you would give us the strength to abide in you. God, put it on our hearts, put it on our minds. God, help us not to get down on the fact that we go negative with our words sometimes. Help us to do something about it. God, spur us on, inspire us, draw us to you, change the condition of our hearts. Help us to bring life to your creation. In Jesus' name, amen.